Numbers chapter 15. We've slowed down the pace a little bit for a couple of chapters here because these chapters have lots of details in it that need to be focused on. So, yes, I've got them going. Thank you for questioning me. Numbers chapter 15. And I want to begin by reading a couple of quotations here from commentaries to kind of lay the groundwork for what we're looking at here tonight. I think it'll be a help to us if we'll do that. And what I'm going to do is I'll read the first one, and then if I can have a volunteer to read the second one, that way I don't read the whole thing, okay? So the first one here and the second one there is by Warren Wiersbe. So the first one here by David Guzik. He says, David Guzik makes an excellent point. Israel was at one of its lowest points in history. It had just rebelliously rejected God's offer to bring the nation into the promised land, and God had co-signed them to wander in the wilderness for 38 years until the unbelieving generation had perished in the wilderness and the new generation of faith would take the promised land. Yet, immediately after the stinging rebellion and the chastisement from the Lord, Israel received precious tokens of God's mercy and care and help to Israel. All right, so that's what we're going to be seeing here tonight, is God's blessing on Israel. All right, he volunteers for the second paragraph. No volunteers. All right, Matt, you have a read of it.
One of these explains that the five basic Mosaic offerings were the burnt offering, meal offering, peace offering, sin offering, and trespass offering. The first three were sweet savour sacrifices designed to please the Lord, but the sin offering and the trespass offering were not sweet savour because they dealt with the guilt and sin, and there is nothing pleasing to God about sin. The burnt offering typified the worshipper's complete devotion to God, for the animal was totally consumed on the altar. The meal, grain offering spoke of the worshipper's dedication of his labor to the Lord, and the peace trespass offering represented joyful fellowship and thanksgiving to God for his blessings. Of course, the offerings point to Jesus Christ. He gave himself completely on the cross, burnt as a burnt offering and paid for the sins of the world. Sin offering, trespass offering. He's our peace and made peace on the cross, peace offering, and he's the satisfying bread of life, meal offering.
Okay, very good. So this is just kind of lays a groundwork for what we're looking at here in this chapter. As they had just, remember, in chapter 14, they had just turned their back on God's offer to go into the land, and they said, we can't go in, the giants in the land, they're going to kill us, we'll be all wiped out, and Then they changed their mind at the last minute and said, we'll go in after all, after they saw how angry God was, and then God just didn't protect them, and then a bunch of them got killed when they tried to attack the enemy. So this is a situation that leads up to chapter 15. But then as we start into chapter 15, he deals with offerings. All right? And on the surface it may look kind of boring, but there's a lot of really neat stuff in here that can be of help to us. All right, so verse number 1 of 15, it says, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye come into the land of your habitations, which I give unto you, I will make an offering by fire unto the Lord, a burnt offering, or a sacrifice in performing a vow, or a freewill offering, or in your solemn feast, to make a sweet savor unto the Lord, the herd of the herd and of the flock. All right, now let's just stop there for a moment. He's talking about something that's going to happen way in the future. Now, I'm not really sure why he's telling them this now, because he said this is what you're going to do when you get to your promised land, and none of these are going to—they're not going to get to the promised land. Only the kids are going to get there. But he's letting them know what's ahead of them and what will take place, and telling them of what he has prepared for them. And these sacrifices, perhaps they were still going to use some of these sacrifices here in the wilderness as well. All right. And in our notes here, these offerings were to thank the Lord for allowing them to enter into Canaan. All right. So this is yet future, as I said. Perhaps God wanted them to be reminders to Israel that he would bring them into the promised land in the end of the 40 years. All right, there was a long way ahead of them, and yet God was promising, I'm going to get you in. You're going to go, you're going to enter into the promised land, and those of you who rebelled, yes, you won't make it in. But the rest of them will. And then he goes on and he gets into some specifics of this. All right, so when we see down in verse number 4, and then shall he that offereth the offering unto the Lord bring a meat offering of a tenth deal of flour mingled with the fourth part of a hin of oil. All right, now, remember the word meat there is a generic word that refers to grain in general. So this is a grain offering or a flour offering and they were supposed to take a tenth deal of flour mingled with a part of a hin of oil. All right, so they'd make a paste out of it, and this was to be their offering. All right, and then we read on, and he says, and the fourth part of a hin of wine for a drink offering shalt thou prepare with the burnt offering or sacrifice for one lamb. All right, so this first offering was a lamb. All right, so this, as they were given this lamb, they were to bring the lamb. So if you were to take your lamb to the tabernacle for an offering, you take your lamb, you had to have your grain or your flour and your oil. And so the flour and the oil were the meal or meat offering. And then they had wine or grape juice, whatever the case may be there. It was the liquid from the grapes. As we've talked in the past there, that's a word that's a generic word that refers to anything that comes from the grapes. When they offered this, they were to offer that. See, what it was, these are the things that were the primary diet of the people. All right, so they had their grain. They had their grapes, and they had their meat, and they were to bring these to offer them to the Lord. And so the lamb in this case was the meat. Then we read down in verse number 6. All right, so if you're filling in the blanks there, the first one, the sacrifice of a lamb. All right, and then as we move on down, the next one's the sacrifice of a ram. All right, verse number 6. For a ram thou shalt prepare for it the meat offering, 2/10 deal of flour mingled with a third part of a hin of oil. And for the drink offering shall be a third part of a hin of wine for a sweet savor unto the Lord. And when thou preparest the bullock. All right, so here's, now notice here the lamb. The lamb is smaller than the ram. So the ram is larger, and as because of the lamb is larger, or sorry, the ram is larger, there's more of the other substances that goes with it. Each time the offering gets bigger, so does the meal and the drink offering that goes along with it. And so then we read in verse 8, he talks about the bullock. All right, so the bullock was a much larger animal yet, the young bull cow. And when thou preparest a bullock for a burnt offering or for a sacrifice of, in performing a vow or a peace offering unto the Lord, then thou shalt bring with the bullock a meat offering of 3/10 deal of flour mingled with a half an hin of oil. And thou shalt bring with a drink offering a half a hin of wine and an offering for an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord. All right, so each one of these, it got more and more of these things. Now, as you think about all these offerings they had to do, you know, we can be so thankful. We don't live under that dispensation anymore. Joe?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
With all these, they've got bulls, they've got sheep, they've got grain, they've got wine, they've got everything there. What were they complaining about in the last chapter?
The thing with this, these were things.
Is it for everybody to give, or is it only the main priest to put that one sacrifice for all?
Well, there was a little of both of that. But the thing we need to remember is this. It's a little bit like the people of Papua New Guinea. Let me just give you an illustration. All right? Especially up where Benjamin lives in the mountains, they had a lot of pigs. All right? But the people many times lived on vegetables because their pigs were valuable to them. And if you butcher all your pigs, you got nothing else to eat. And so it was, in many ways, similar to Israel. You didn't just go out, you know, if you had a flock of, I don't know how many sheep they might have had in their little families. Let's say you had 100 sheep. You know, if you go out and sacrifice, or you go and eat those all the time, then you don't have, they're not going to multiply. All right? So they did probably eat them occasionally, but I don't think it was the regular diet. And it wasn't as though they were starving. They just didn't like what they were eating. And even these grain offerings, I have no idea where they got that. Did they carry it from Egypt?
Yeah.
Did they buy it from neighboring nomads that were around? I don't know. I don't think they grew it. That wouldn't make any sense because you can't grow crops and travel, and especially not in the middle of the wilderness. These are some tough questions, and I don't really have answers. Even like the grape juice. I mean, no matter what that was, where are they going to get that? It doesn't keep forever. Yes, sir.
What did they do after they offered it? Did it completely burn it up?
Okay. We're going to deal with a little bit more of that as we work our way through some of these offerings. Some of them were completely, like the burnt offering was completely burnt up. But most of the offerings, only a portion of it was burnt. Some of them weren't even burnt at all, but they were offered to the Lord in various ways. So there's lots of different ways they were offering these things. And as we work our way through the book, even today I was working on chapter 17 or 18, I think it was, and it was dealing with the sacrifices and how that some of them were for, you know, when they would offer their sacrifices, the priest got some of these things. Now, you know, I could see how some of the people would be jealous of the priests and the Levites because they got to eat more of this meat than the average people did. But at the same time, who wants to trade them places? You know, because the Levites didn't have any property. They didn't own anything. They were just depending on the people. And we'll be dealing with that as we get to those passages. But they lived on the tithes of the people. If the people didn't give their tithes, and that's actually happened later on in Israel, the people stopped giving their tithes and offerings to the Lord. And as a result, the Levites didn't have anything to eat. So they didn't have any choice but to go out and try to find jobs and work for people and farm themselves out to try to even find food to put on the table because they didn't have any food coming in. And then when Nehemiah came back to the land, one of the things that he did was to get them to start bringing in their tithes so that the Levites could have something to eat. And they started bringing in their tithes, and the Levites were rejoicing because they had lots to eat again. So there's a lot of things. You know, you look at this and you think, well, yeah, the Levites and the priests, they got to eat a lot more of the meat-type stuff. You even think about Samuel and Eli. Eli's sons were actually stealing of this. You know, when the people would bring in their offerings, the portion that belonged to the Lord was the choice portion, and Eli's sons said, no, we want that piece. So they would take it out and eat it themselves. And they were stealing from God the very choicest thing that belonged to God. And they were getting fat on it, and even when you think of it, some were literally fat on it, because Eli, remember what was said about him? And when he died, he was sitting on the wall or sitting on a stool by the gate waiting for the news to come. And he was a very fat man. When he heard the news, he fell off and broke his neck. He and his sons were gorging on the stuff that belonged to God. So there's a lot of these things that it all goes together, and there's no real one place that tells you all the details about all of these things, but they piece together as you work your way through. Okay, good questions, guys. Good questions. All right, as we continue on here in verse number 13, verse 13, all that are born in the of the country shall try. All that are born of the country shall do these things after this manner in offering of the offering made by fire of sweet savor unto the Lord. All right, so they talked about these offerings, these three different kinds, the lamb offering, the ram offering, the bullock offering. And they were to bring these things with their meal and their grain and their oil and their wine and all that they're bringing in. And so this is something that applies to everybody. It wasn't just for a few people. All of them were supposed to do this. These were the guidelines for Israel and for the strangers. All right, so you read on down verse number 14. And if a stranger sojourn with you, or whosoever be among you in your generations, and will offer an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord, as ye do, he shall do. All right, so a stranger. What would be a stranger?
Somebody who's not a Hebrew.
Okay, somebody who wasn't a Hebrew that was living with them. May have been a slave, may have been just somebody that decided to travel with them, become one of them, or join up with them. There's a lot of different things that it could be, but it was someone that wasn't a Jew. All right, well, they weren't a Hebrew.
So, is this after they entered the promised land then?
No, sir.
Oh, so I thought that...
Well, he was telling them about these things that were coming, but they haven't got there.
I know, they won't be traveling, they'll be in the land.
Oh, you're saying when they actually implement all these things?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is a good question, and I don't have a full answer for that. He does say that these things were for then, but does that mean that they didn't offer any offerings at all during the wilderness?
Well, it doesn't say they should. It just doesn't.
Yeah. So. I guess I can't fully answer that question.
No, but why would they put up the tabernacle if they didn't do any offerings?
Thank you. That is a good point. I mean, why have a sacrifice, an altar there if they're not going
to
use it? Yeah, so that was...
It was important to get rid of your sins and to pay at least once a year to do that.
So, all right, well, I appreciate you bringing that up, because even though I can't think of verses that actually say that these things were implemented, then, yeah, that does kind of answer the question.
Specifically, these instructions were for when they entered the land, so... They may or may not have been doing the traveling, but this is specifically for 10
years'
time.
Yes. But the other things that we... Yes, ma'am.
Verse 2 says, when you come into the land of your habitations. So does that mean the land? Or does that mean the lands they're going to be in before the promised land?
Yeah, she's got a point there. Land of your habitations.
That may be a good point. Most of the commentators that I looked at talked about the promised land, but at the same time... their habitations were where they were. So, anyway, we can look into that and see if we can find out any more. If you dig up any...
Verse 13 says, born in the country.
Sorry?
Verse 13 says, those that are born in the country.
Born of the country.
Means the land of Israel.
That born of the country would have been speaking of the Israelites.
Yeah, it's coming to the land. They haven't come into the land yet.
So the people rather than the land of Israel.
So there's lots here.
Yeah,
there's lots of information. All right, so let's move on down to in the chapter here, verse number 17. All right, verse number 17. And here he's dealing with some interesting offerings. It says, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye come into the land, whither ye... I bring you. So that's definitely talking about the promised land, all right? Then it shall be that when ye eat of the bread of the land, all right, he's talking about no longer eating the manna, but they're going to be eating of the food from the land, ye shall offer up an heave offering unto the Lord. All right, now let's just stop there for a moment. A heave offering. A heave offering was... I think the easiest way to describe it is a heave offering was an offering that was voluntary. It was an offering of thanksgiving. Sometimes even the tithes were called heave offerings. But it was something that they gave from what they had. It was a first fruit offering type of a thing with a heave offering. Now we'll look at in a few moments here exactly what the heave offering was. What it meant by a heave offering here, but it was the idea of a heave offering was that of a contribution, right? That's the line, blank there in your book or in your paper here, a contribution. It was a heave offering was a contribution. They were contributing something to God. All right, so this was a thank offering from the first of the harvest. So he says this is after they come into the land. So, you know, he must be just looking ahead. And again, he must be just talking about, this was going to happen when you get to the land. That's 38 years down the trail. But this was going to happen when you get there. Why deal with it now? I can't answer that. I don't know. All right, verse number 20 says, "And ye shall offer up a cake of the first dough, of first of your dough, for a heave offering, as ye do the heave offering of the threshing floor, so shall ye heave it." All right, so the threshing floor, what was that? What was the threshing floor?
That's where they threshed the wheat.
Yes, okay, so that's where they took the wheat kernels out of the stalks. Yep, so they beat it and toss it up in the air and with a fork and things of that nature. All right, so the first fruits of the threshing floor and of the dough, that would have been of their flour that they've made into bread dough. They were to have heave offerings of these things. Verse 21, "Of the first of your dough ye shall give unto the Lord an heave offering in your generations." So when they would make their dough, they were supposed to take the first portion of it and give it to God as an offering. Right? And these heave offerings, we're going to see later on that in many cases, maybe not all the cases, but many cases, it was given to the priests and the Levites. And the priests and the Levites then were able to use that as their substance to feed on. Okay? Got a question?
These offerings are more just like what we would call today donations, in a sense. They weren't, not all offerings were like just for covering sin. They were for like some of them were to give to the
ministry. Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, some of them, like these burnt offerings and things like that, they all had purposes behind them. Some of them were to give thanks. Some of them were to deal with sin. But the heave offerings were required, but at the same time, they were their first fruits offerings. They were giving them to the Lord as thank you, Lord, for providing. Thank you, my garden's producing. Thank you that my fields are producing. Thank you, my sheep are producing. That type of a thing. Okay. Now, in verse number 22, if ye have erred and have not observed all the commandments which the Lord has spoken unto Moses. All right, now here we're dealing with mandatory things. He said, if you've sinned, you've erred, and have not obeyed these commandments, verse 23, even all that the Lord hath commanded you by the hand of Moses, from the day that the Lord commanded Moses, and henceforward among your generations, then it shall be, if aught be committed by ignorance without the knowledge of the congregation, that all the congregation shall offer one young bullock for a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto the Lord, with his meat offering and his drink offering according to the manner, and one kid of the goats for a sin offering. All right, so here's a situation of a sin that was unintentional. It was an ignorant thing that they did. We didn't know that was wrong. How are we? We're really sorry. We didn't know we did wrong. That kind of a thing. All right. So they weren't just out there blatantly saying, "Yeah, God said don't do that, but we're going to do it anyway." It was something that they didn't realize was not right. And sometimes we face things like that in our lives. You know, when we do something and think, "I didn't know that was wrong. I've been doing that for years, and I didn't know that was wrong." And then you read it in the Bible, and God says, "No, don't do that." All right, so there are things like that that even now we would run into, where people do things that aren't right, but they didn't even know it was wrong. And so here they had special offerings. They were to deal with that, to offer to the Lord. This was a sin of ignorance, and they were to offer these things to the Lord.
One sacrifice for the whole congregation?
Yes.
Every family?
No, it sounds like it was for the whole congregation. This was a congregational thing where the whole nation did something wrong that they didn't realize. Maybe they, I don't know what it would be, you try to think about it, but you know, maybe it was some, they allowed some sin in their camp. Oh, for example, the guy that was picking up sticks, all right? If they wouldn't have dealt with that, they didn't know at the time that it was against God's law to pick up sticks. I mean, they could have put two and two together and think, "Yeah, well, that's not right." But if they didn't know that and it happened, then what do they do? So that would have been an ignorant thing that they didn't know was wrong. But then once they found out it was wrong, then they'd come and deal with it. And so the same thing is true with us. you know, in our lives, if you do something that was wrong and you didn't know it was wrong, but then you find out somebody tells you, well, you shouldn't be doing that. Why? Well, here the Bible says this. Oh, I didn't know that.
I think when we were kids, we played a, they call it telephone. We, you just whisper something in someone's ear, you know, and then you go all around, and then the last person says, a lot of times the message comes out different. So I can just imagine with all those millions of people over that if they had a message and then it was all transferred, you know, there might be some confusion at some point.
Yeah. It could be something they've done out of just confusion. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. So this is a situation, God says, it's still wrong. You still got to deal with it. And here's how you deal with it. This is the offering you make for this unintentional sin. But then he goes on. He says if it's an individual that does it, all right, So the individual, verse number 27. So all the way down through 25, he's talking about this offering for this sin of ignorance. Let me read 25. And the priest shall make an atonement for all the congregation of the children of Israel, and it shall be forgiven them, for it was his ignorance, and they shall bring their offering, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Lord, and their sin offering before the Lord for their ignorance. And it shall be forgiven them, all the congregation of the children of Israel and the stranger that is sojourneth among them, seeing all the people were in ignorance. All right, verse 27. And if any soul sin through ignorance, then he shall bring a she-goat of the first year for a sin offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for the soul of the that sinneth ignorantly, when he sinneth by ignorance before the Lord, to make an atonement for him, and it shall be forgiven him. All right, so here's a person. He says the first one is a national thing. Now the second one is a personal thing. One person does something ignorantly. God says, all right, here's the situation. You offer a young she-goat, not the same thing as they had to offer a big bullock for the whole nation. This is just a small she-goat, and they go through the same ritual for the she-goat. Okay? And then we come down to verse number 30, and he deals with a intentional sin, a presumptuous sin. All right, verse 30, but the soul that doeth aught presumptuously, whether he be born in the land or a stranger, the same reproacheth the Lord. And that soul shall be cut off from among his people, because he hath despised the word of the Lord and hath broken his commandment. That soul shall be utterly cut off. His iniquity shall be upon him. Now here's the situation. God says if there was an intentional sin. Now what kind of things would be intentional? What would we think of when you think of intentional? What would that be? Sorry? Yes, I mean, it depends on the situation. I mean, yeah, you can't steal accidentally, necessarily, but I think that it may be, and I'm not exactly sure whether it's just a matter of why God said, thou shalt not lie. We've all told lies. So does this include all of us? We'd be all dead people, all right? It's probably more serious than that. It's probably a situation where someone premeditates and deliberately does something in defiance of God.
A little bit later on, much is made of moving someone's boundary marker, which is a fairly deliberate sort of thing.
Yes. Yep. So where they say, I know God said I shouldn't do that, and I don't really care. And if God doesn't like it, tough. Well, that's that kind of a sin was that he's dealing with here. And that the penalty was death. And so, you know, living under the law, I mean, these people today that say that they follow the law, when you meet a Seventh-day Adventist and they try to tell you we got to follow the law, you take them back to these chapters and say, do you follow all this stuff here? I mean, they don't, obviously. Yes, sir.
I think it kind of reminds you of, in the situations where God said, like, if the children don't obey, you just meant to stone them. Now, if the child one time got upset and misbehaved or something, I don't think they meant, okay, let's
do
that. But if he deliberately says, I will not obey, and doesn't listen, and doesn't want to listen to anybody, That's the kind of case for Gaza. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, and in that particular situation, it was not a one-off. The kid had a bad day and just got mad and said, "I'm not going to obey." But it was a persistent thing where he was an obstinate, persistent son. We've tried and tried, and he just won't do right, and he won't listen, and he won't obey, and he won't follow. Then yes, that was so deliberate sins, and you know exactly what the deliberate part of it is. You know, I mean, I'm glad God's in charge of all that. But you know, here's a situation where if they did that, they were to be cut off from their people. They were to lose their life. Well, as you study it through the scriptures, I've done some search on that, and there's a lot of debate on what it means.
I mean, simply just to say, killed.
Yes, I understand that, and I agree with what you're saying there.
Cut off in other parts of the Bible doesn't automatically mean killed.
But
since it's cut off from among his people, to me it sounds more like
excommunication. But all right, if that's the case, and maybe it is, all right, but as you study through these, and I did, I looked up a lot of these examples, some of them are obviously the end of life. Others are more like this where you say, well, it's not real clear. But either way, I mean, you think about that for an Israelite to be cut off from among his people. You're no longer part of us. You're no longer welcome among us. You're on your own. See you later. He's left out on his own. It's a very, very serious, serious situation. Whether it was death or whether it was excommunication, either way, it was very, very serious. And I know that some of the cases clearly sound like this one here, like it could be just that it was excommunication. Other instances where this phrase is used sounds like it's the end of life. Yeah. So there's a little of both of them in there, all right? So then he gives an example here, all right? So here he's about to give us an example of one of these deliberate sins. As the verse number 32, and the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks on the Sabbath day. And they that found him gathering sticks brought him unto Moses, and Aaron... And Moses and Aaron, and unto all the congregation. And they put him in ward, because it was not declared what should be done to him. And the Lord said unto Moses, the man shall surely be put to death, for all the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And all the congregation brought him without the camp, and stoned him with stones, that he died, as the Lord commanded Moses. All right, now here's an example where it was very clear. You can't get around that one. It wasn't just a matter of being cut off. He was dead. He was stoned with stones until he was dead. So it is hard to figure out why would, if the being cut off from your people meant death, why didn't he just say it like he did here? I don't know. But if it means excommunication, that was a very serious thing too. So either way, difficult situation. Then we get down here. He ends the chapter on a little bit of a positive note. And that's encouraging. Verse number 37, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in their borders of their garments throughout their generations, that they put upon the fringes of the borders a ribbon of blue, and it shall be unto you for a fringe, that ye may look upon it, and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and do them. And that ye seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which ye use to go a-whoring. That ye may remember and do all the commandments, and be holy unto your God. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. Now, he talks about these ribbons of blue. Now, the word ribbon there refers to a cord or a twisted thread or a tassel. sometimes there, you'd see a tassel hanging from somebody's hat or something of that nature. I know, I don't know if they do it here or not, but in America, when at graduation time, you'd have a little tassel hanging from the little flat hat that they would wear at graduation time. That's the kind of thing he's dealing with here, something woven cloth into a little tassel. And it was a bright blue or velvet color, violet color. Exactly how many tassels of blue were and where the borders of the garments were located is unclear. All right, what's the border of your garment? Well, you might say the edge, but the, you know, like if my jumper here, it's got a, you know, all around the edge. Well, is that the border, or are there corners of that? You know, it's hard to identify. Yeah. Joe, you go.
Jesus said something about the Jews in Matthew 23. He said some of the Jewish leaders, accused some of the Jewish leaders of making their fringes extremely long in order to make a show of their religion without being committed to the Lord's commandment.
Yeah. So these tassels that were hanging down, they were blue, and he says that they were to blue, they were to be hanging on the borders of their garments. And as I looked up this and I dug into this, some say that it might have been on the borders of the you know, most of them were robes of some sort. At the bottom of their robes, that's one possibility. Another is that they had more of a jacket type of a thing, or a mantle type of thing, or something of that nature, and it was around that, and so it would be more of the waist type. I don't know if anybody knows for sure where they wore these tassels, but they were there to distinguish them and to remind them of the Lord's commandments. All right, now.
Blue being expensive coloration. Blue and purple were generally the royal colors.
Mm. And, you know,
from shellfish.
So even getting that, I mean, just have a think about that. Even something as simple as that. Yes, they had the wool from their sheep, but where are you going to get this blue dye? You know, they would have had to buy that or find it somewhere. But it was very precious, very expensive. You're right, Peter. Appreciate that. All right. Now, as we think on these things, just some principles here to work on as we work our way through here. Think about the cost involved in making these various offerings. I mean, those, all these offerings, these animals were precious to them. It was not cheap to do these kind of things. And it was because of their sin, and part of it was because of their offerings to God. So it always, when we give to the Lord, it always is a sacrifice. You know, even today when we would give tithes and offerings to the Lord, it is a sacrifice. And people sometimes don't like that, and they don't want to sacrifice and give to the Lord. And that's our selfish nature. All right? But, you know, there's debates on even that, you know, of tithing. You know, well, is that Old Testament? Well, yeah, it was Old Testament, but there's nothing in the New Testament that says that it wasn't God's way of doing it. Now, two. Yes, it is a different dispensation, but at the same time, we got to remember this, that, and I'll be looking at more of this later on in a couple of the chapters, but I'll just mention it now. Yes, it was a different dispensation, but God ordained that as a means of providing for the Levites and the priests, and that was God's means of doing it. He says 10% of the people can provide for the priests and the Levites, and they can live on that. And if you throw that out with the old dispensation, which many people do, then you have to have something that's going to replace that in the New Testament. And some people say, well, it's just voluntary giving. Yeah, well, if you look at the voluntary giving of the average Christian, that's why churches struggle. That's why churches have a hard time paying their pastor. That's why churches have a hard time, because people don't give. They'll throw in a dollar or two and say, I've given my little portion. And God expected 10% in order to provide for the needs of the congregation. So there. Well, what I'm saying is this. I'm not saying that there's a law saying we have to follow the 10%, but what I'm saying is if God ordained 10% in the Old Testament for the provision of his people, we cannot just throw that out and say, you know, throw in your coins on Sunday and that'll do good enough. God still has to provide for his people today. There has to be some means of providing for that. And you look at what Jesus did when he evaluated the Old Testament as he was preparing for the New, And what did he say? In every situation, he said, ye have read that it had been said, but I say unto you, and he always strengthened it. He didn't weaken it. All right. So when you look at it from that principle, you know, Jesus might have said, well, the Old Testament says 10% tithe, but I say unto you, he didn't say that, but yes, I know Jesus was under the Old Testament, but he was in that intermediate period where he was preparing for the new. Okay? So it's just things to think about. Yes. Yes.
The Pharisees thought they were tithing well. That was out of their abundance.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issue in the churches because people give and they do all this, and it's to do with what I do. Works,
you know, works. Well, see, the whole thing there.
Against works. Not that there's anything against giving, it's from the heart. But if you impose a law, then it's not by grace.
No, and I'm not saying that we're opposing a law. All I'm saying is that if God said in the Old Testament they were to give 10%, then for us to say 1% is good enough now, how is he going to provide for his people now? Bingo? We're not going to do that. All right, so there's got to be a means. So it's something for us to ponder and think on, but we'll talk some more about that later. But as we work our way through here, I wanted to just make some comments about this ribbon of blue, and then we'll close it up here. All right, so you think about these intentional and unintentional sins. We've kind of already discussed that. We'd be in big trouble if we had those situations today. Then when you think about the ribbon of blue, what has God given to Christians that might, in a sense, take the place of wearing the ribbon of blue? The Holy Spirit. All right. The ribbon of blue was there primarily to remind them of what God had commanded them, to remind them of what God wanted them to do. Now, as you think about that, what do you think is the most common problem associated with the ribbon of blue?
Expensive.
Yes, expensive, but beyond that.
My ribbon's shinier than yours. Well, like it's an outward display.
Yes. But what was its purpose?
Remember.
Yes. And as you think about this, if everybody's got their little ribbons of blue, and it won't be very long before you say, oh yeah, well everybody wears a ribbon of blue. And you forget all about why we wear a ribbon of blue.
Jeez.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is... Yes, I know. But what I'm saying is that anything you do regularly... It's easy to forget why you do it. All right? And so once they all got used to the fact that they all had these ribbons of blue, how many of them would actually be thinking, oh, yeah, your ribbon of blue, that's reminding me of God's commandments? Or they just get used to it. And we have the same problem today. You know, that's the main reason why we don't have the Lord's Supper every week like some churches do, because it becomes a ritual. And they just do it out of habit, and they don't even think about it. It's just something they do, and it's just part of going to church. And it loses its meaning. So there's a real problem, a real potential problem anyway, with the ribbon to blue.
When do you have it?
We have it about every 2 to 3 months.
Every 2 to 3 months?
Yep, on Sunday night. Okay? The Bible doesn't say how often you're supposed to, it just says when you do it this way. Okay. Some churches even have it once a year. I think that's a little bit on the... They parallel it with the Passover, and I think that's maybe a little bit broad, but that's their business. Every church can do their own thing. But all right. Any other questions or comments?
The threshold has got the ten knots. And that was a clear reminder while they were wearing, every time they touched the knots on that plug, it was a reminder of keeping the commandments. So that blue and the tassel at the end of the threshold was specifically a reminder daily to keep the commandments of God.
Yes, but at the same time, anything we do all the time, it's easy to still forget.
Not that crucial. That is why God gave him the reason for you to put it before them, and they have to do it, is a reminder. And even that thing that they tie around when they go and pray and whatever, it's a reminder. It's not a case of you just have to do it. You know why you have to do it, and you have to go and repent and pray.
But at the same time, at the same time, when you look at the Jewish people today, and Jewish people today may be going through the rituals, but they're still not, it doesn't do it from their heart. So there's always that problem.